Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for October 19th. Something special we've never done. We have gone coast to coast truly on our hosting. I'd like to welcome from the Heading Right Network, the winner of the Battle of the Blog Talkers for the Right Side, Kevin Ross from Los Angeles. Welcome, Kevin.
David, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'm ready to mix it up a little bit.
All ready to have a good time, and Tim Shiflett's here as always. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, we got quite a show. In addition to just having Kevin and bringing that new Republican perspective in, we're going to have David Johnson of Strategic Vision Polling, and he's going to be with us during the first half hour. Around the midpoint of the show, Spencer Hughes, who's from Fox News Radio, is going to come on in and talk about Kevin and I being on with him all next week, Tuesday through Friday, and he'll join us in the midpoint. The second half of the show, we'll have Mike Cantone from Take Back Georgia releasing another ad. And then this just been a really, really full political week to boot, so a lot of stuff here. And I tell you what, let's go ahead and have Spencer on right now through the power of audio.
Hey, Spencer Hughes here of Fox News Talks, Fox Across America. And I'm happy to welcome David McLaughlin of the Kudzu Vine to co-host a special show with me the week of October 20th. So join us at 8 a.m. Eastern on SiriusXM or online at foxacrossamerica.com the week of October 20th for some great talk programming.
Yes, and that was the promo he sent me for the Eastern time zone. And I know, Kevin, you have one for the Pacific time zone, which I guess I'll say, what, 5 in the morning?
Right, 5 in the morning. So it's going to be a wonderful way to get up and get ready and get started with talking politics and going toe-to-toe with you, and it's all good.
Yes, well, David Johnson's going to join us in just a minute, but until he does, a lot of topics to talk about, but just one I think we have to talk about is, it was on your blog, threebrothersandasister.blogspot.com. There may be other ways to access it, and you can tell us. But about these Obama bucks, and this was in the Atlanta Constitution, among other sources out here in Georgia, just a despicable, imagery that they created. You can see the vile thing on your website. Not that you're endorsing it. I'm sure you stand probably more offended than I am. But, Kevin, give us your thoughts on this.
Well, thank you, David. I will say this, that for me, that issue of those Obama bucks really pales in comparison with what we're seeing in terms of this latest endorsement that Barack Obama received. Colin Powell, one of my heroes, one of the individuals who I admire when I think about why I'm excited to be a Republican who's also African-American, him endorsing Barack Obama really speaks volumes to where this election is as we whittle down to these last few days. And when I look at something of that magnitude, the issue of what took place out in San Bernardino, which is a part of Southern California that is a very much a Republican stronghold, it's deafening how Powell's statement really just one-ups the issue of the Obama bucks. Now, having said that, the thing about these Obama bucks, which were very disturbing, was the fact of the matter is you had a situation where someone had printed some ad literature. It featured Barack Obama, and next to him was some ribs, bucket of chicken, Kool-Aid, and watermelon. And there was some language that reflected clearly that this was not just a coincidence. I mean, the fact of the matter is, when you look at Republicans who are using race as a means of dividing the country, that plays directly into that stereotype of black folks eating these types of foods, and then the next step to that is that they're lazy, that they're shiftless, that they're not the real Americans, quote unquote. So I could see why we would be reading about it in the Atlanta Journal and Constitution, because it was outrageous, and I'm embarrassed on behalf of my fellow Republicans who felt that that was an effective way to make the case against Barack.
Yes, and one thing I always find, if you can find some humor out of this, is every white person in the South likes fried chicken, watermelon, ribs, all these things. It's a Southern type of food, and a man of color from Hawaii isn't going to have the Southern food heritage. So folks like Tim and I should have our face on there more than a Barack Obama, because it's a Southern thing, not, you know, more so than an African-American thing. I think we have a caller in here. Caller from the 706. Welcome.
It's David Johnson. It's supposed
yes,
to be
sir. David, I thought it might be you, but then I thought you might be calling from a 404 or another Atlanta area code.
I'm actually
threw me off there.
I'm sorry.
David, welcome.
Thanks.
Strategic Vision Polling. You're on here with Tim Shiflett and Kevin Ross, who is also a fellow Republican. So we gave you a little someone in the House that shares your political vision.
Well, that's always good to have.
Yes, David. I saw that you used to work for Bob Dole's campaign. So I said, all right, I'm in good stead here.
You got it.
Yes. Well, David, you're busy as usual doing polling, and I believe in the last week you've released four polls, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida. This Florida poll, since that's just usually one of the closest states around, tell us what you found.
What we found is the momentum is definitely shifting for Barack Obama, and Obama has moved into a slight lead. And if this continues, Florida will definitely be switching blue right now, but there's a lot of undercurrents, too, that could work in John McCain's favor, including the fact that Barack Obama is continuing to fare very poorly among Jewish American voters in South Florida, which is usually a stronghold for Democrats.
Yes. Now, is that moving any, or is that pretty much staying what's solid for about months?
It's moved some. I mean, we've seen actually some erosion. We're actually in the field over this weekend as well, and we've seen that McCain has tightened the race some in Florida as well. So right now, it's definitely a very tight race, and despite the spending advantage that Barack Obama has, John McCain has some built-in advantages with Charlie Crist's built-in political organization in Florida and Charlie Crist's high popularity in the state, which is also helping John McCain at this point.
Yes. Now, looking at the different regions of the state, is there anywhere that Barack Obama's doing better than the typical Democrat does?
He's definitely doing far better in the critical I-4 corridor from Daytona Beach to St. Petersburg. And right now, that area is very much up for grabs. That's one of the reasons why we've seen Sarah Palin down in the villages, John McCain in Melbourne over this past weekend. That's the critical area that Republicans usually fare a lot better in, but right now Barack Obama is faring very strongly. Additionally, he's helped, too, because Tom Feeney, one of the congressmen from Orlando, is finding himself in a lot of trouble. He's been linked to Jack Abramoff, and it looks like Tom Feeney may be going down to defeat, so that's helping Barack Obama as well.
Yes.
Well, you know what, David, if I can just jump in. So you were saying that Barack is doing well in Orlando?
He's doing right now currently very well in Orlando. He's helped a lot because his superior organization right now, his advertising advantage, and then a lot of local political issues are helping the Democrats at this point.
Now, would that otherwise be a Republican stronghold but for the economy, and I would imagine the tourism industry taking a hit because of what's going on with this daunting economic crisis that we're in?
The city of Orlando itself is actually Democratic. You've had previous Democratic mayors. Buddy Dyer, the current mayor, is a former Democratic state senator, candidate for attorney general as well in Florida. It's the suburbs around Orlando that tend to be Republican, and right now they're trending slightly purple, perhaps a slight tinge of blue. And the other thing, as I said, too, is also Tom Feeney's problems with the Jack Abramoff scandal, and also another Republican congressman, Rick Keller, is in the fight for his life as well. He appears to have lost touch with his district, and he's being hammered for voting for the bailout on Capitol Hill.
Yes. Now, I saw something on Drudge Report last week that none of this comes as a surprise about Orlando. said Acorn registers Mickey Mouse. I mean, if Mickey gets all his friends on board, of course Orlando's going to go blue.
Exactly, and we expect to hear a lot of charges of voter irregularity in Florida. Early voting has started in Florida as well, and so a lot of people are looking at the Acorn factor. It's a major issue. Right now, Republicans are really hammering it. Republicans that I have spoken to on the ground, they're concerned, but they still think the organization that they have will outperform Barack Obama when all is said and done.
But why before we move off of Florida, there is another district. I made the pronouncement a few months ago, that the Democrats would not lose a single House seat, but there is a Democratic House seat that is in trouble, the Maloney seat. Any numbers there?
55-29 for Tom Rooney, the Republican challenger. Look, Tim Mahoney has had a big X on his back ever since he was elected in 2006. The district's usually Republican. It's how the district that Mark Foley had until he was caught in the scandal with the pages. Mahoney just barely eked by in 2006, despite the fact Mark Foley's name was still on the ballot. And the problem that Mahoney had even before the scandal began, a lot of Democrats never trusted him. He was a former Republican up until 2004. He votes a fairly conservative line. He never seemed to build any kind of rapport in the district with the Democratic organization, let alone Republicans. And his entire campaign in 2006 was family values, and he was a reformer. And we find out now that he was having multiple affairs during the campaign, and they continued. And what really did him in was, more than anything, after he broke off one of his affairs, he fired his ex-mistress.
So
I'm gonna pass.
So Mahoney's a bad little nasty boy, in other words, huh?
He is, and I'll tell you, I know reporters down there. They said that they never could deal with him directly whatsoever. He always runs through aides. He told them that he was too important to talk to them. So I mean, this doesn't really come as a surprise right now. And we also know too, the Democratic Congressional Committee has already stopped running ads in his support. And he also lost his advertising agency as well. So, I mean, if he were to survive, it would be a major shocker.
Yeah,
I think Tom Rooney was probably the luckiest congressional candidate in the country this past week.
I think everybody would agree with that. Tim, what you got?
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask you a question about Georgia's early voting. Early voting data shows that about 13% of the registered voters have voted. And of that number, about 37% of that vote is African-American, while only 26% of the registered voters are. Do these early voting numbers surprise you, or do you think this was expected?
I think this was something that we expected. Look, the Obama campaign has really organized here in the state of Georgia. They were prepared for this. They wanted to get out a strong African-American turnout. They're especially not only in Georgia, in Florida as well. Ohio's another state that they're on the ground trying to get their voters here as to do the early voting. So I'm really not surprised by those numbers whatsoever.
Okay, and the other question I wanted to ask you about was the U.S. Senate race here. Obviously, most of us who follow politics in this state are a little bit stunned that Senator Chambliss is in trouble. Do you have any data that shows exactly why that is?
One of the problems is you have a large number of Republicans right now who are supporting Alan Buckley. In our last poll, Buckley was attracting 15% Republican support, and that's definitely hurting Saxby Chambliss. And he has a lot of problems right now with the conservative base, who have been angry with him over the immigration issue, and then also after the bailout bill on Capitol Hill.
Okay, thank you, sir. David?
Yes, staying with Georgia, we see that Alan Buckley is gaining traction and is causing real problems for the Republican candidate, Saxby Chambliss, and really for both candidates getting to 50. Why has Bob Barr not taken off to that same level in Georgia, being a Georgia resident?
Part of it is voters don't see Bob Barr as a true libertarian, and we're seeing this not only in Georgia but in other states as well. He's not resonating with his message, and he doesn't really seem to be here in force in Georgia. And a lot of voters feel that a vote for Bob Barr right now is a wasted vote, whereas with Alan Buckley, a lot of Republican voters feel they can register a protest vote for Buckley, then there'll be the runoff, and they'll go back and vote for Chambliss with holding their noses.
Yes. Kevin, what you got?
You know, what I find interesting, David, is going back to this issue of voter fraud, what is this really about? Because when we talk about voter fraud, it's such an infinitesimal number from a standpoint of how, you know, individuals actually show up to the polls and really do vote. Is this the Republican Party playing mischief, if you will, with the reality of where the numbers are going from an electoral college standpoint? Or is there really something to this issue that keeps coming up with Acorn and these fights to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, there really is something this year. And let's not forget, with voter fraud and the charges of voter fraud, both parties have leveled it. In Wisconsin, one of the states that we have polled in consistently with our company, in 2004 and even back in 2000, there were strong allegations, and several Democratic members of the state Democratic Party were actually fined, and one was jailed for participating in voter fraud. And in both of those elections, in 2000, Al Gore only won by 0.2% in Wisconsin, and in 2004, John Kerry only won by 0.4% in the state. So those allegations are very serious. And in a lot of these states, what we're seeing currently is some of the polls are beginning to tighten, and this allegation of voter fraud with Acorn has a lot of Republicans concerned that they could tip these states to the Obama camp with large irregularities.
Now, see, speaking from one Republican to another, I don't buy that. What I'm looking at is, okay, we've got all this discussion, and, you know, as much as I want to see the Republicans, and just as a disclaimer, I'm supporting Barack Obama. I'm a Colin Powell Republican, if you will, especially in light of his just announced endorsement. But that said, it really does look to me as if there's a setup as to challenging the actual electoral vote, because the way that I'm looking at all this, state by state, it looks as though Barack Obama is actually going to win the popular vote. But not necessarily. But the battle really is about the electoral votes, specifically in certain states, because you don't have a big discussion about voter fraud in California, which we know is going to go to Barack Obama, or you don't hear this discussion going on in New York.
Actually, you do in New York. The New York Conservative Party and others have been raising that issue. Also, New Jersey, another state that's probably going to go Democratic by a fairly large margin. You've also had numerous allegations as well, and there's several court challenges at the state level on that.
But isn't the emphasis, I mean, you know, truth be told, aren't we really talking about Ohio? Aren't we really talking about Florida? Aren't we really talking about those states that at this point Barack is really stretching his area that heretofore you wouldn't necessarily see Democrats even having a chance at winning or at least being really competitive?
I think the concentration is Ohio. Ohio's always been a swing state. But when all is said and done, I don't think the Acorn allegations are going to matter. We had several polls come out today that show that John McCain's moved back into the lead in Ohio. And I think despite the economy, despite Acorn, on Election Day, it's not going to matter with the registrations. I still believe John McCain's going to carry the state of Ohio.
And finally, when we talk about the Republican Party, has the party completely abandoned people of color? Because when I look at who are the surrogates speaking on behalf of John McCain or the Republican Party, you don't necessarily have any people of color in elected positions speaking on behalf of the party. You know, you have a lot of people who are strategists or who are with the campaign, or, you know, you have your token Michael Steele, who I like, but he's not even holding office right now. I don't see a presence of any Asian women. I don't see Native Americans. I don't see Latinos. I don't see Condoleezza Rice. I'm not seeing anyone who's even in a position of saying, well, even if McCain loses, who are going to be those individuals who are office holders who are going to pick up that mantra? Have you noticed that at all, or is it just me?
I have. I mean, we've already begun the battle's already been speculating that if John McCain doesn't win, who is going to be the new head of the RNC? And, I mean, Newt Gingrich's name has been mentioned, but also Michael Steele's name has been mentioned as well.
And doesn't it make sense that he would need to be, not even just so much in terms of with African Americans, because as a black Republican, I feel as though it's just a given that I'm not supporting McCain.
Well, I think what we do see in some of the states there are African-Americans supporting John McCain, same as the Hispanics. I think after the election, we're going to see the party reevaluate, and I do
Absolutely.
Think we're going to see someone like Michael Steele emerge as the new RNC chairman and probably set the party in a new direction.
And what do you think that direction is going to be?
I think it's going to be far more an open tent. I think we're going to see somebody like Bobby Jindal as well highlighted. I mean, he's basically technically announced that he's running for 2012. He's going up to Iowa the month after the election to give a speech. So the 2012 election has already begun.
Wow, it's Jindal.
Interesting news.
Well, we're just going to leave Sarah Palin, and then I'll shut up.
I think Sarah Palin's going to be around. I think Tim Pawlenty, John Thune. But I think the one really to watch is someone like Bobby Jindal. He's got the D.C. experience as governor right now. He's been able to bring in a large number of African Americans. Let's not forget, Ray Nagin originally supported Bobby Jindal. He's reached across party lines, and I think also his story is very compelling. Very open, and he's a dynamic speaker as well, and he's got a strong record right now to run on in Louisiana.
Okay, David, I'm going to turn it back to you before I hog up anymore.
It's just sharing, not shutting up. And gosh, you've said so much already, David, that I'd like to get into, but one thing that really struck my attention was I looked on your site. You have Barack Obama winning by 2 points on the 10th in Ohio, but you just said you released a new poll that shows him losing in Ohio. What's going on there?
We're releasing a new poll that will be out this week, and I also was referring to some other polls as well that were out just today that showed a slight of McCain lead now in Ohio. We're seeing a tightening of the races, of the numbers, especially among the national polls, and with the national polls beginning to tighten, I would expect that we'll begin seeing the state races begin tightening a week later.
Well, what's causing the Ohio tightening?
A lot of it is, I mean, Republicans traditionally close very strong at the end. Also, the Acorn issue, and I also think the Joe the Plumber issue has really resonated, and I think the Democrats have not handled that issue well, and it's hurting them in some of the areas in Ohio, even in Pennsylvania as well.
Yes, but that particular Joe was a house of cards, if you will. I mean, the symbolic guy, there may be something too, but that actual fella was just, you know, a disaster in
reality.
It
was a house of cards, but voters did not like how the Democrats went after him.
And if I could just chime in, that doesn't mean that Joe the Plumber doesn't exist. And really, when you even look at a Barack Obama, there's a lot of symbolism behind his candidacy. So
exactly.
Why wouldn't that same symbolism be extended to a person that's not a pundit, that's not an office holder, that's not a celebrity, but who personifies this issue of socialism?
Well, I mean, Joe the Plumber has become the rallying point for the Republicans right now, and since he has, we've seen a slight movement. Diego Hotline released a poll today, and have actually shown since that debate, since the Joe the Plumber issue has been raised, independents are now moving back toward John McCain, and for the first time in 2 weeks, John McCain has taken a slight lead among white females as well.
This is nationwide or one particular state?
I'm sorry?
Is this nationwide or in one particular state?
No, this is nationwide.
Nationwide.
And Zogby also showed the same thing as well.
Yes. Now, talking about things that may change the reflection of the race, we had a issue on Friday, which we hadn't even gotten into as the, you know, the substance of it, but Sarah Palin made some comments about, you know, real America, pro-America areas. Has there been any backlash you've already started to see from those comments?
Not at this time.
Yes.
And why do you think that you expect to see some?
If it's played up some, we haven't really seen it playing up in the media that dramatically. The focus really has been on the Powell announcement, Sarah Palin appearing on Saturday Night Live, and also this Joe the Plumber issue. So I think all that has drowned out those comments that a lot of people are not aware of them because the
but
media.
But then Tina Fey actually had part of her joke about those actual comments.
She did, but I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize those comments were made, and the media has really bypassed them.
And you know what?
Okay.
If I can just add, when I was watching Sarah Palin on Saturday Night Live, as a Republican, the first thing that came to mind, and I don't know if you all even thought about this, is I said, you know what? She has rhythm. She was moving to the beat. And that may not be something that you all even thought about, but what that said to me was, okay, there's a certain cool hip factor that she's not someone. The worst thing you could see is a George Bush trying to clap to music in a black church. It's painful. You know, whereas when you saw Sarah Palin on Saturday Night Live, you can look at her and say, okay, she probably is very comfortable in situations where she could have fun, she could be loose, she has a certain rhythm to her style and her persona. And I don't know, David, did you pick that up at all, or is that just me overanalyzing?
I know what you're saying, what you're alluding to.
And she was also somebody who can laugh at herself as well, which with George W. Bush, a lot of voters, even Republicans, have not seen. She's very talented, and she's a very charismatic politician. The question is, will she survive if John McCain goes down?
Yeah. I want to jump in with a question, if I may. Obviously, one of those game-changing moments that we're talking about might have occurred this morning on Meet the Press, and I was wondering how Colin Powell's endorsement might affect this race and what types of voters may, you know, perk up and look at that and change their mind based on that endorsement.
The kinds of might are your more moderate Republican voters and your independent voters that both campaigns have been going after. Both campaigns know that they have the base of both of their parties. What they're looking for are these swing voters. In Ohio, they're looking for swing voters in the outskirts of Columbus, Cincinnati. In Pennsylvania, they're looking for the swing voters in Bucks and Chester County. In Florida, as I mentioned before, the I-4 corridor, those are the voters that the Powell endorsement might move.
David, who you now, didn't mention was the military and women, because what I found myself looking at is that Powell potentially himself, put himself in the position of having been the first African-American president, seemingly does well with women. And how do you talk about this person, Barack Obama, not being a good military commander-in-chief, and yet you have this individual who is so decorated and so regarded in the military? Doesn't that also weigh in on that endorsement?
It really does. The only thing, though, that as from a strategist point of view that you'd recommend that John McCain does is basically run Hillary Clinton's 3 o'clock in the morning ad. I'd run in its entirety, including the part where it says, I'm Hillary Clinton, I approve this ad. And then the only thing I would add would be, I'm John McCain, and I approve this ad, because Hillary Clinton still carries sway with those voters. And basically, that's McCain's only weapon against the Powell endorsement, is to use Hillary Clinton's words against Barack Obama in the primaries.
But then you drag her back into the fight. David, kind of a get-out question before I let you go is, looking at the polls, maybe not polls you've done, but just polls you've seen, what's the diamond in the rough for both Barack Obama and John McCain, the state we don't think's really in play but could be on underlying poll numbers you've seen?
I think that state could be Wisconsin for John McCain. For Barack Obama, I think the state that could really be in play that no one's really looking at is West Virginia.
Is that why he's spending $5 million on the ground in West Virginia, David?
It is. We've seen polls that are closer. And I mean, look, every campaign cycle, you always have, you know, if we'd only thought about that state or invested money in that state, it would have been different. And I think those are the two states right now that could be the surprises come Election Day.
Yes.
And what does this all mean for the 60-seat majority in the Senate, as well as all those loss of seats in the House? I mean, because at this point, I don't get a sense that there's a lot that McCain can do, although I saw that the poll numbers are shrinking. So there's some movement with what Barack Obama is not really tapping into. And I don't know if it is Joe the Plumber or William Ayers or whatever. But is there any way to salvage the rest of the party seats?
I think there is. I think that's what you're going to see a lot of the Republicans doing right now, concentrating on the Senate seats, trying to salvage some of the congressional seats, and trying to maybe try to flip a couple of House seats. Besides Mahoney's, there's Lamson's seat, which used to be Tom DeLay's seat, which is likely to flip as well. There are several other Democratic seats that were won in 2006 that might revert back, and I think that's where the Republicans are throwing everything into right now. And the other thing is, too, speaking of the 60-seat majority, just because they might have 60 seats on Election Day doesn't mean automatically, though, once Congress convenes that there'll be 60 Senate seats. I mean, we're hearing talk of Jack Reed, the senator from Rhode Island, being tapped for defense secretary if Obama gets elected. If something like that were to happen, if some of these senators are put into the cabinet, don't forget the governors of the states make the appointments, and a lot of these governors in these states are still Republican.
Well, why would they even risk that, though? I mean, of all the different people who are now jumping on the Obama Express, why would you put a senator that's a Democrat in a cabinet position that then allows – I mean, not that I would be upset about that at all, but it just doesn't seem like it would make sense from a bigger, larger strategic standpoint.
It really doesn't. Let's not forget also, too, you still have Joe Lieberman, who's more than likely going to caucus with the Republicans as well.
David, we thank you for coming on to the show and being with us and sharing all your knowledge.
Thank you.
Thanks,
yes,
David. Nice
well,
to talk with
you. That was great having David on, and that flows right into our next guest. As y'all know, listeners of the Kudzu Vine, because you helped me get there, both Kevin and I are going to be Tuesday through Friday on a special edition of the Spencer Hughes program, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 4 o'clock Central Time. I want to welcome Spencer onto the show. Welcome.
Yay!
Hey, David. Thanks so much. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Spencer. How are you doing, guy?
Hey, doing great. Thanks, David. Thanks for having me on your show. It's a pleasure.
And I promise, Spencer, no disparagement of Fox at all. We love Fox.
Well, yeah, I did want to hear from the higher-ups last time, but it just took me a little bit by surprise. But we're going to have a lot of fun this week, you guys. I'm really looking forward to it, considering the early West Coast time especially. I don't know about you guys, but I'm barely through my first cup at that time usually of coffee. But I'm looking forward to it. We're actually a slight change of plans, as I'm sure your listeners know. We were going to start tomorrow. But there's a special program on the economy tomorrow, so we're going to run it Tuesday through Friday, as you said, David, 8 o'clock on the East Coast, 5 o'clock West Coast time, and really looking forward to it.
Yes, and I've been listening to your program all week, trying to get a sense, and be good to cover some topics with you. That'll give you 2 hours, I guess, to really talk it up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a lot of fun, and can't promise I know already what the topics are going to be, but usually we kind of do topical stuff, as you guys do. So whatever is big, really big tomorrow morning, I'm sure we'll be covering it together, and it'll be great taking the phone calls, too, from all the listeners, from your audience as well as ours.
Well, you know, yes, Spencer, I will say this. Given this announcement on Meet the Press with Colin Powell, I would say submit to you that probably even trumps some of the economic issues that we're dealing with.
You think so? Yeah, that might be something we'll bring up.
Oh, sure. Are you kidding?
Okay.
I mean, that is something. I mean, there are no elect, and that's what I was even saying before. I am not seeing any Republicans who are elected in positions of authority that are stomping for McCain. I see Michael Steele. I see some of these strategists, and I see individuals who are either writers or people who are just on the fringe or maybe part of the campaign, but you don't have any elected official who's Asian, who's Latino, who's Native American, who's black, who is saying, come on, come with me, tribe, come with me on this, you know, straight talk express that McCain is driving. I don't see it. So for Powell, even J.C. Watts is alluding to the fact that he's probably going to be voting for Barack, and even Condoleezza Rice has said, you know, this would actually not be necessarily a bad thing. So where is the elected officials who are saying that we're with you through thick and thin? I'm just not seeing.
No, it's very interesting. You know what? That might actually be – well, we're not on tomorrow. I was going to say we could do that for the topic tomorrow. But too bad we're not on tomorrow, because that would be a hot one to do. And if there's nothing bigger happening tomorrow in the election cycle here, we might even be talking about that Tuesday morning.
Well,
yeah,
I will tell
you
what David just said about Bobby Jindal from Louisiana really perked me up, because someone said the future of the Republican Party is Jeb Bush. And I found myself going, can we get out of the bushes?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not a Bush fan by any stretch of the imagination.
I'm like, if it's all just based on one Bush after another, then something is wrong. We need to flip the script here. So anyway, I hate losing, and I'm down with the party, but I don't have a good feeling right now.
Well, you know, speaking of the Bushes, I was so happy to see that Oliver Stone's W finished two places behind Beverly Hills Chihuahua. That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Oliver Stone's
got to be kicking himself right now.
The first night I heard actually did a good Friday night opening.
Yeah. I think it finished, I think on Drudge, I'm not sure, I just saw a thing on it. I think it finished fourth behind Beverly Hills Chihuahua was number two.
Oh, that means it ran out of steam because after Friday it was actually quite strong.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I kind of have had a busy setup for Halloween weekend with the kids, so I'm not with my nose in the news as much as I will be late tonight. But I just saw that early. Those could be early numbers, actually.
Yes. Okay, well, I'm sure we'll discuss those things and more in the coming week.
Yeah, absolutely. And people could tune us in on satellite radio. I'm sure you guys are going to have links on your sites as well, right?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, they can go to foxacrossamerica.com as well. There's all sorts of ways. And I want to thank you guys for really coming together with us on this because, as I told you, Kevin, on your show the other night, that when they pitched this idea to me, I just loved it. I love innovative things. I like thinking outside of the box. And the first thing I thought was, man, why didn't anybody think of this before? And I don't think this has ever been done this way, combining blogtalkradio.com and Fox News especially and, you know, a little bit left, a little bit right, and coming together, especially in such a big election year like this one. So I want to thank you guys for your participation, and congrats for going all the way, and looking forward to the shows with you guys this week.
Well, David, can I just interject something real quick?
Sure.
This is the beauty of the internet and technology, because as we were talking, I said, all right, let me see how well Spencer delivers the goods. Let me actually type up what was the movie rankings for this weekend. And
I could show you the story I saw, but I can't vouch for the timeliness of it. But what did you find?
Well, let me just assure you that your recollection is on point. It did come in number four position. The crime thriller Max Payne was the top film. And then it was followed by The Beverly Hills Chihuahua, The Secret Life of Bees with Queen Latifah and Alicia Keys and Jennifer Hudson came third. And then Oliver Stone's W was a fourth at $10.6 million. How's that for efficiency?
That's amazing. You know, I heard we played a clip on my show Friday. Somebody had brought it to my attention because I'm not a Bill Maher fan. I can't stand him. But they said that Oliver Stone was on Bill Maher the other night, and we actually played the audio. Did you guys hear that interview?
No, I actually don't particularly care for Bill Maher either, even though because I don't think he's true left. I think he's just a rabble-rouser.
I think so. But I couldn't believe it. He interviewed Oliver Stone, and he asked him, what do you think would have happened to George W. if he had gone to Vietnam? And he said he probably would have been killed. And everybody, I'm not kidding you, everybody in the audience just applauded and laughed and was hooting and howling, thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And that just disgusted me. I'm not obviously a Oliver Stone fan, so it didn't pain me to see him finish fourth place there.
Well, you know, I don't like that talk either way. I mean, because for me, anytime you start talking about someone dying, I don't see the humor in that, and I don't see the value. And I know that Bill Maher is a shock jock type of persona. I mean, I like some of the guests he has on, and there have been times where I've been entertained, mainly because he seems to have this it's incessant fetish with African American women. So I find that very intriguing. What is that really about? But I digress.
Spencer, thanks for coming on, and we're looking forward to it all week.
Well, thanks, David. Thanks, Kevin. And thanks to you and your audiences. And I hope everybody tunes in to hear you guys and us have some fun this week. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. See you on Tuesday.
See ya.
Yes. One little note before we go to our next guest on Bill Maher is I actually saw the promo to his movie, and he actually mocks at one point Democratic Senator from Arkansas, Mark Pryor, a man that I've actually worked in his campaign. So I just know that Bill Maher is not a kind of guy that anybody tries to say, oh, he's, you know, reading for the Democratic playbook. They just don't know because, you know, Mark Pryor is a good Southern senator and Democratic senator, and Bill Maher's, you know, trying to use him in his little game, if you will. Our next guest, and I'm kind of excited at this point, Kevin, we have you on the show. We have a Republican pollster. We have Spencer Hughes, which leans to the right. And we have Tim and I on my very own Democratic kudzu vine. We've been outnumbered 3-2, but we're fixing to have Mike Cantone from Take Back Georgia to even the score up. Welcome,
all
Mike.
All right.
Hey, everybody. Thanks, David, and congratulations.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tim. How are you?
Good.
Yes. To kind of set this up, bring everybody, because I know we've got some new listeners tonight, Mike runs an organization called Take Back Georgia, which looks to expand progressive ideas in Georgia. And one of the initiatives y'all are doing is kind of shedding light on Saxby Chambliss's record, a man that really did some, just went to the base level in 2002 against Max Cleland, a guy that even a lot of Republicans consider a hero in what he sacrificed for our country. And I guess I've done a little setup to the ad, but kind of tell us what you're bringing us this week.
Yeah, well, David, yeah, that was a great setup, and you're exactly right. For people across the aisle of every party, Libertarian, Republican, Independents, and Democrats in Georgia, you know, Max Cleland, no matter what you felt about his votes and his issues, he was a hero to all of us, and that still is, you know, his Saxby's attacks on Max are the reasons that he is in the U.S. Senate, and we've had such shameless leadership over the past 6 years. So this ad is the next in our line of accountability ads. But we wanted to, you know, not forget Max Cleland and what happened, and really, you know, tie all these actions and votes of Saxby back to where it started. Shows a clear chain of exactly how we got to the point we are with his leadership and why we need to, you know, fire Saxby Chambliss on November 4th.
Yes, well, let me go ahead and play that ad, and then we'll talk just a bit more.
Great.
Honey, I'm learning more about Senator Saxby Chambliss, and I don't think there's any way I can vote to reelect him.
Uh-oh. What'd you find out now?
Well, I haven't forgotten about his shameless attack ads against Senator Cleland, but I never knew John McCain had actually weighed in on the issue. He told the Washington Post what he thought about Saxby's ad back in 2003. Quote, "It's worse than disgraceful. It's reprehensible."
Wow. If John McCain said it, even I would have to agree. I guess you could say it'd be more than disgraceful to vote for Saxby this year. It'd almost be reprehensible.
Even John McCain agrees. Saxby was shameless in his attacks on Georgia's hero Max Cleland. We simply can't afford 6 more years of Saxby shameless. On November 4th, it's time to fire Senator Chambliss. Visit SaxbyShameless.com today to learn more.
Take Back Georgia, Inc. is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or a candidate's committee, paid for by Take Back Georgia, Inc.
Wow, it's just another powerful ad, and I actually remember that all the Vietnam veteran senators, John McCain, John Kerry, Chuck Robb at that time, Bob Kerry, Chuck Hagel, all those folks came to Max Cleland's defense, and so you've highlighted that. Now, one thing we've talked about in the past is, we really believe in Georgia there are going to be some John McCain, Jim Martin voters, Jim Martin being the Democratic U.S. Senate candidate. We don't see as many Obama Chambliss voters. Is this an idea on how to exploit that gap, if you will?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And we were looking at, you know, we've made a lot of headways in, and Jim Martin definitely has. So we were looking at where to spend, the remainder of our resources in the closing 2 weeks of this campaign to really, you know, push Jim over the edge and make sure that we do remove Saxby from office. And, you know, this is that demographic that's going to decide the U.S. Senate race. And, the theme of the ad itself is, you know, exactly what we're aiming for. You know, if even John McCain agrees, that what Saxby has done in the past is shameless, and, you know, there's no one in the state of Georgia that can't be, you know, persuaded and look at the situation objectively and vote against Saxby this year, because quite frankly, it's the only reasonable thing that Georgians can do, no matter how they're voting at the top of the ticket, which I still think, Obama and the Democratic side will have higher numbers, but John McCain is still polling higher. Jim Martin's locked in a dead heat. So I think it will be these McCain-Martin voters that are just so frustrated with Saxby Chambliss, the same as, you know, the rest of us, and these hardworking Georgia working families that have really felt the pain of the past 6 years of not having a U.S. senator that represents their interests and fights for them.
But Mike,
yes.
Isn't a lot of what's causing this angst and, you know, this is anti-incumbent frustration, economic turmoil, and even, excuse me, when, in a state like Georgia, where you've got Republicans saying, well, he voted for this farm bill and he has these issues on immigration reform that we don't necessarily believe in. His positions aren't that contradictory to Martin's position if he were in the office. So I don't quite understand. Is it all just based on his previous attacks? Or is there something that's going on right now specifically as to his job currently that would warrant this sort of reaction to him?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, even before he was elected, he was conducting himself shamelessly, and during the past 6 years he was. And you mentioned a lot of the issues where Saxby has, you know, gone back and forth and flip-flopped, if you will, and, you know, tried to hold one position and switch it when his base became angered and frustrated. So I think, you know, the problems that he's having with the conservative base and his issues with Republicans stem directly from his failure of leadership, but it's really his failure to stand up for these middle ground, independent and, you know, leaning Democratic, rural Democrats around the state that did, you know, push him over the edge 6 years ago. And ever since he's been elected to the Senate, he's never once fought for their interest. He voted against SCHIP and Children's Health Insurance three different occasions.
But then how would this same group, though, would have wanted him to vote for the $700 billion bailout or immigration reform or these farm subsidies? Would they have wanted him to vote differently?
You know, I think there's a vast majority out there that are frustrated with him.
Would they want him to vote against that $700 billion bailout?
Did they want him
to? Those individuals that you just mentioned.
Well, and actually, I mean, Kevin, this wasn't an area that Take Back Georgia actually looked at in any of the ads.
Okay. This
they
is
focused
just,
on other
about
areas.
Max Friedman?
Yes.
Yeah,
well, Mike, I thank you for coming on the show and sharing with these ads. And if there's any more work that you're doing between now and Election Day, let us know.
Great. No, we definitely will. And we'll be kicking off the new drive with this ad starting tomorrow. So please go to saxbyshameless.com and help support us in the last 2 weeks. We're going to be putting these last two ads on radio all across the state of Georgia.
Yes.
Nice talking with you, Mike. You take care.
Great. Thanks. And good luck,
David. Not much.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
And, Kevin, I didn't mean to cut you off too much there. It was just I knew that wasn't the $700 billion bailout wasn't one thing they had looked at in the ads, and so I was trying to kind of keep it to where Mike had put his group of
the emphasis
towards.
Well, you know, but to be honest, if you look at a lot of Republicans are very angry about Republican senators and House of Rep members who voted for that bailout, and they said that they were going to punish those individuals, and so I'm just trying to understand, though, if you're someone who's independent or if you're someone who's even a Democrat, I would think that his vote would assuage you in some way that, okay, well, he was looking after me, because it's not like he scored as many points as he thought he would with his base. So, you know, it's almost like whatever you do, you're going to get screwed.
Yes, and I will tell you there has been a backlash, but those votes are probably going towards Alan Buckley, the Libertarian, and I think Tim's going to even shed more light on that with the outrage of the week, and we're going to do that a little early because then we can come back and we can do our a Senate attack ad segment, even if we run over a few minutes. Tim, go ahead.
Yes, and as luck would have it, we are talking about Saxby Chambliss tonight, and I want to start by saying that I'm shocked, simply shocked. I'm sad to report that Saxby Chambliss has gone negative in his advertising in Georgia. Not just negative, but negative in a big, big way. Of course, that's not really a surprise. I mean, we have seen this before, right? Well, sort of. The first time, of course, was in 2002. We know what he did then to Senator Cleland. We can't forget it. Despicable does not begin to describe it. But notice that I said sort of. There is a difference this year. You see, in 2002, Saxby attacked when he smelled his opponent's blood in the water. But this time, he's attacking because he smells his own blood in the water. And the attacks are just savage. When you indicate that somehow your opponent might be guilty of harming children or may be responsible if they die, then you're getting pretty low, and in my opinion, you're getting fairly desperate. In the meantime, the polls are closing in around old Saxby, and he's reacting by throwing the kitchen sink and even the whole house at Jim Martin, but so far, he tries him out. He hasn't been able to shake him. Now, to their credit, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee has entered this race with some support for Martin. You see, they can smell blood in the water, too, and the whole nation is suddenly tuned in. And please notice that we didn't see Saxby go ballistic until just very recently, because I think he had hoped to simply skate through this race, believing that he was some sort of icon, perhaps a conservative darling in a conservative state, but as the polling is showing us, he was wrong. Now, there will be those that contend that Saxby's problems emanate solely from the efforts of the Obama canvassers who registered over 200,000 new voters in Georgia over the summer. It would be easy to blame it on that fact and just move on. And it would be just as easy to blame it all on the fact that the GOP brand might be poison right now. After all, if a landslide or a wave is brewing, then they don't stop at state lines, right? But it's more than that here, though, I think. A lot of this is about Saxby Chambliss himself. He made a lot of Georgians angry a while back when he was a central figure in the botched immigration plan. His problem was that he was for it until he saw how people reacted negatively here, then he was against it. Alan Buckley, the Libertarian candidate, pointed out that fact just today, something that we discussed just a while ago. Now, he's further angered many who normally support him because he signed on to the massive bailout of Wall Street. It is clear, according to all polling here in Georgia, that the overwhelming majority of Georgia voters are simply opposed to this bailout. Today, I watched the latest U.S. Senate debate on Channel 2. It was wonderful, in my opinion, to see Saxby Chambliss standing there sweating. It was wonderful to see him fumbling as the facts kept getting in his way. It was just great to see what I perceived as fear in his eyes, as he now has realized where he really stands. What did he do in this debate, you ask? Well, he did his usual. He claimed his innocence, and he said that everything is the fault of the Democrats. And then he did the funniest thing of all. He talked about his leadership, and then he ran away from Bush. Well, naturally he did. Honestly, I want Senator Obama to win this presidential election in the worst way, and I surely want to see all of our local Democrats up here in the mountains in my home county of Chattooga prevail and thereby shut out the Republicans in this Democratic county once again, well, at least until the next election. But I reserve a special place in my brain for the hope that old Saxby will go down. If anybody needs to lose this year, it's this guy. My favorite historian was a guy named Theodore H. White. And he said that, and I quote, "History is cyclical. It goes around and it comes around." And he was right, indeed it does. Well, Saxby, you dished out your disgraceful mess against a fine American 6 years ago. You questioned the patriotism of a decorated veteran when you yourself dodged the drought. And I bet you thought you got away with it. Look at the polls, Saxby. You didn't get away with it. On November 4th, my fondest wish will be that voters remind you that there's more to being a servant of the people than simply talking. You earned no respect from me with your ads this week, Saxby, but you did earn the outrage of the week, David.
Yes. And, Kevin, just to put some light on this, this is a race that, 6 months ago even, Saxby Chambliss had a 20-plus point lead, and it's evaporated to 2 points. And then another thing that we learned just this week that was fascinating, these two guys not only went to the University of Georgia at the exact same time, they were fraternity college brothers, probably lived in the same house at the same time, knew each other, and I just found that to be very intriguing, almost to the point of shocking, that the fraternity brothers that were not just in the same fraternity from, you know, 7, 10 years apart, but at the exact same time would run against each other.
And, well, Kevin, I might throw in that you were spot on when you mentioned the bailout. The voters here did react very negatively to Senator Chambliss' support of that.
Well, I do know, and I know we're running out of time, that he's been able to outspend Martin 4-1. And what I really do think is it may not necessarily just be about Max Cleveland. I think it's really about the economy, just like it's not really about William Ayers. You know, all of these peripheral issues really don't address the fact that at the end of the day, no matter how much respect people have for Max Cleveland, that that's really going to dictate how they vote as it relates to whether or not their credit line is cut off if they're in business or if they don't feel as though they're able to meet their mortgage. And I think that that's really the issue that Republicans are having to deal with, not so much these peripheral issues that don't necessarily really speak to what the American public is dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Well, it's on several levels. I think for a lot of swing voters, you're right that issues that affect them matter more. I think for Democrats, it gets Democrats in this state more ginned up. And, you know, if you ask a Democrat which would you rather defeat, Chambliss or Isaacson, the other Republican senator, it would be 90-10.
Yeah, but you just made the point that 6 months ago that he was leading by this double-digit point. So if people already knew about the type of person he was, the attacks that he had on the Democratic senatorial candidate, that didn't change 6 months ago.
Well, there's one more point that I was going to get to, and that was there's a guy named Drew Weston, and he's written a book that's pretty much national, The Politics of the Brain, and he talks about how a lot of times there's a gut feeling about a guy or a lady that's running for office, and even though sometimes you can't put your finger on it and you're voting for him or against him may change, there's that gut feeling that you kind of get to, and there's probably a lot of people's gut after what Saxby Chambliss did that while they might have approved of him in some months, they had that reaction to him somewhere deep down, and it's just manifest itself more clearly because of the other issues.
If nothing else, it's reminding me of my days of yore from being at Morehouse when Senator Sam Nunn was I think first put into the position of being in the U.S. Senate, and I remember seeing him at the Atlanta campus and thinking, now who is this guy? But everyone agreed that he was someone that was a friend of black colleges and universities. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in these last few days of the campaign.
Yes, and I've been mentioning that you're a Morehouse grad that's lived in Georgia, the Peach State, as we're going to be on Martha Zoller's program tomorrow, 11:40 Eastern time, 8:40 your time. So we're going to make other appearances. So we are going to have an appearance together all week, which is good. But I guess, Kevin, I know we just got 1 minute. We may end up running over, and people getting on the podcast will get a 65-minute show, and that's great. We've looked at the DSCC and the NRSC, and looking at the attack ads. Kevin, did you have one you picked out as you thought was going to be the most effective?
Well, you know, I have to tell you that I'm probably not the normal person because I was a political science major. You know, I was a prosecutor for a number of years, and I was a Democrat for up until about 5 years ago. So I really do understand that this is a sport, and it's really all about strategy and who could cause the other party's numbers to kind of move in a different direction. And I got to tell you, the attack ads that I'm seeing with the Republicans, I don't think they're working. I don't think the robocalls about William Ayers and him being a former terrorist and Barack's not ready to lead, I don't think that that's effective. I think what's more effective is, again, what I was saying about this whole race between Chambliss and Martin. It's about the economy. And I think what we're seeing right now, in fact, if you look at the most recent polls, the numbers are tight. And I think that part of it is race, and I think part of it is people just really want to hold on to their own political ideology and hope for the best. Because in any other circumstance, the Democrats should be up by 10, 15 points. And right now that race is down to 3 because it's still about the economy. And people who are in business or who want to start a business or who aspire to have a certain standard of living, I don't know if Barack's message of across-the-board tax cuts and this Robin Hood ideology is really resonating with them.
Okay. We'll probably just shelve this topic till next week, and Tim will have his saved. I've got mine saved. And when we welcome other folks back, I do want to announce that what we're going to do over the next 2 weeks, and we'll put this on the blogs, is we're going to have at least 30 minutes of the show dedicated to open candidates, open mic night, if you will. We're going to invite candidates on for maybe 2 and 3 minute slots to kind of tell us the last little bit about their campaign. That's up, you know, on deck for next week. But Kevin, I appreciate you coming on with us and looking forward to all next week.
Listen, it was a pleasure, and I look forward. And thank you for coming on my show, The Kevin Ross Show, over at Blog Talk Radio. And again, I blog at Three Brothers and a Sister. And in fact, if you go over there, you'll see David's purty face with a little baby. And next to me, as we're promoting the Fox News radio show with Spencer Hughes, that I'm looking forward to all next week. So we're going to have a good time. And I think we make an interesting pair, you and I, me being out here in L.A. and being a Republican and African-American, and you being the Southern gent with the Democrat pom-poms in the air, waving them like you just don't care.
As Sarah Palin might say, I'm an anti-American and a pro-America part of the country. And that's a joke, even though the one thing I do have to say is I don't think our pollster, David Johnson, caught that I was talking about Mickey Mouse being registered as a joke. I think he thought I was serious. I was making a joke. But, Tim, go ahead. What you got?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Kevin, I voted for one. I'll only plan and voted for one Republican this year, and it was you, buddy.
Oh,
I
Tim,
wanted you to know that.
Stop it. Stop it. See, you're killing me now. I'm hearing bells ringing now. Oh, that's my doorbell.
Yes. Well, I'm going to go ahead and sign off with Spencer's promo to leave you till next week.
Hey, Spencer Hughes here of Fox News Talks, Fox Across America. And I'm happy to welcome David McLaughlin of the Kudzu Vine to co-host a special show with me the week of October 20th. So join us at 8 a.m. Eastern on SiriusXM or online at foxacrossamerica.com the week of October 20th for some great talk programming.